This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not substitute for professional medical advice. Please seek a medical professional or healthcare provider if you're seeking any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Thanks, everyone.
Hello. Welcome back. You wanted more energy. Here it is.
Hello. Welcome back. I just...
Because of the last one, she's like, I think people need more energy. So I'm like, yeah.
Hello. Welcome back. This is Funny Medicine.
You are? I'm Julie.
I'm Evie. I always go first. I wanted you to, you know, have a chance to go first.
Oh, God. Anyway, so this is part two of autism.
Yes, please check out part one.
Please don't.
That was so good.
It was, and it was very long. It's probably the longest episode we have
satisfying.
Done thus far, but it was very satisfying. Yeah.
Yeah.
Lots of debunking, lots of like just straight out facts. We're never going to hit you with like the politics of it all because that is not our lane. And we don't believe medicine should be involved that heavily into politics as it is these days.
Yeah.
So we're just sticking with the facts.
Yeah.
And here we are with part two of autism.
So in our last episode, we kind of talked a little bit on like symptoms of autism, the category of autism, what was Asperger's, what is it now? And then we dove deep into the vaccination myth, that whole entire nonsense.
The quack.
The quack. Yeah, the quack. I like that. The quack. That should be the chapter. The quack.
Yeah.
Chapter name, the quack.
Part one, the quack.
Yeah, exactly. But honestly, guys, that was such a good episode. You're going to love it. Anyways, okay, part two. So we're going to kind of talk into...
More about autism as like everything that
it affects. Yeah, how it affects that individual, other things that could coexist.
And new studies.
New studies, yes.
And new treatments, new prospects, new... Just like what's happening now with autism.
Yeah. All right. So we're going to start off on the health risks and co-occurring conditions. Mm-hmm. So again, while autism itself is not a disease, okay, autistic individuals do have higher rates of certain medical conditions, okay? And this is important for people to be able to understand that person as a whole.
Yep.
Autism often co-occurs with other health conditions, with about like 80% experiencing sleep disorders impacting families due to the effects of hyperactivity and also anxiety. Okay. Now, epilepsy is common as well, but so are gastrointestinal issues as well. Anxiety, like we said, depression, ADHD is a big one as well. Other conditions, other genetic conditions can also have that link. Down syndrome, 16% of autistic kids. That's what you're trying to say, right? 16% of autistic children have Down syndrome. Okay.
Exactly.
There could be other links in genetic diseases. Let's just say like for Down syndrome, 16% of kids with autism may have that link with Down syndrome. Eating disorders and also genetic syndromes like Fragile X. Fragile X is a really big one.
Yeah.
But medical conditions associated with
No, just skip that. That's like the source where I got that from in case you wanted to know, like, where did that number come from?
Oh, okay. All right. Now, these co-occurring conditions can also can just complicate care, right? Yeah. And there's a lot. There's a lot going on. And I feel that that is one of the things that mostly stresses out a family is just how much care.
Yep.
Because there's so much going on.
It also depends on the degree.
Yeah, on the degree too. And I always tell parents, I'm like, the dust will settle. Like everything will become normal. But at the beginning, it is a lot of information that you're taking in with a lot of like emotional
diagnosis. Yeah.
Emotional stress. Okay.
Yeah.
So these co-occurring conditions can complicate care with autistic individuals more vulnerable to chronic and non-communicable diseases due to their behavioral risk factors. And this can, an example of this can be like physical inactivity. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, are common illnesses like the cold worse for children with autism? Yes and no. So it depends on the individual child, right? Like every other case, yep. right? Yep. Regardless of autism. While autism itself does not directly weaken the immune system, many autistic children experience unique challenges when dealing with common illnesses like colds, flu, and ear infections. Mm-hmm. These challenges can make illnesses feel worse and probably last longer due to combination of sensory communication and immune system factors. Mm-hmm. And that goes with everything. It's not just with like common colds, right? It's everything might look a little bit more different because the patient themselves needs a different approach. And it is really hard to look into ears of some of my autism spectrum kids.
I could imagine.
It's so hard because yeah. it's that sensory thing, right?
Exactly.
It's the anxiety. It's you're really close. You're in my space.
And then you're feeling and hearing it.
Yeah, you're feeling it. So it's really, really yeah. hard. I think with a lot of therapy and behavioral therapy, I think that is a challenge that can be overcome. But it is really, really hard. Mm-hmm. So I can see how it's very difficult. And you don't want to cause distress right. to these kids as well. Right. And it's just a lot. It's very complicated. I had a patient one time with chronic constipation mm-hmm. that needed just disimpactions every single time. You literally had to physically disimpact. And it came to a point where we actually recommended like just sedating so that he wouldn't have to deal with yeah. the stress of that.
Right, right.
So it's really, really hard. And the approach that you have to go mm-hmm. with in order to treat them and be able to take care of them can be really difficult. And I can only imagine if that's in a place where it lacks the resources to do that. So again, like some of these like sensory sensitivities, many kids with autism can have heightened sensory sensitivities, which means a stuffy nose might feel like if it's suffocating to them.
Right.
Sore throats can be extremely painful. Fever, body aches can be really distressing to them. And even things that are like very mild cold symptoms can be causing major discomfort for them. Mm-hmm. And again, it's like something they're not used to, right? They're not used to feeling that way, like why? And they don't understand that. And then take into account maybe the age, yeah. right? At the age where they really cannot comprehend that.
Right.
Now, difficulty communicating the symptoms. So a lot of kids struggle to express themselves.
Right.
So sometimes it's really difficult to pick up on the symptoms. Sometimes it might be vague. Sometimes we depend a lot on the caregiver yeah. as well. What are the symptoms that they are concerned about?
Right.
And they might not understand what's really happening to their body. Sometimes I feel that a lot of kids sometimes confuse nausea and abdominal pain. They might tell me that their tummy hurts, but it's really nausea. That's also like a hurdle that yeah. you have to jump. Now, some children might not even complain until the symptom is so severe.
Yeah.
Making it really hard for parents to detect any illness early on.
Exactly.
So that's also really hard.
Yeah.
Now, unusual pain responses, again, they have that hypersensitivity aspect to everything.
Or hypo,
exactly. Some feel pain more intensely, which makes something like a fever, okay, feel crazy out of this world. Mm-hmm. And then others might feel less pain. So maybe they won't even have... Parents will think that the symptoms are so mild that yeah. it's not really that severe. Maybe even possibly a delay in care. We don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
Then rigid routines and anxiety around the illness. So a lot of kids that have like strict daily activities, if they're sick, that's obviously going to interfere with their activities for that day. And it's really going to affect them more than someone else that might not feel that difference so pronounced. Mm-hmm. Taking medications. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, that's a rough one. I mean, if you're talking about pickiness, textures, even temperatures, yeah.
It is so hard and I feel so bad because it's not just that the kid is like, oh, I don't want to taste it because it tastes bad. No, it is anxiety
right.
that you're dealing with.
It's a whole other level, yeah.
I feel so bad because... Sometimes we just have to admit them for IV antibiotics.
Right. Yeah, because they just can't.
They cannot take it.
Yeah.
They cannot take it. And listen, I am the first person that I am there trying my best to like get this. Let's see how we can work. What can we mix it with? What can we hide it in? What can we like? But they know, man.
Yeah.
They know.
Yep.
They know.
Yep.
Now, also being sick can also just like disrupt their routine. So like that'll give them more meltdowns.
Yeah.
So that's just, it's just hard on everyone.
Of course.
It's hard on everyone. Kids with autism do generally have like higher rates of gastrointestinal problems. So they're more prone to gut problems like constipation, reflux, IBS. Common illnesses like the flu, like, and stomach bugs can really worsen already like pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. And then antibiotics can also disrupt the gut bacteria, leading to digestive distress. And also kind of like what we were saying in our previous like studies, everything that has to do with the gut is so sensitive.
It is, yeah.
So I can imagine that they are going to suffer a little bit more.
And again, remember, these kiddos are picky.
Yeah.
Picky eaters.
Yeah.
So that also contributes to their gut health as well. What are they eating then? Whatever it is that they choose to eat, what is it? So it's difficult. All of that, you have to take all of that into account as well.
Yeah. Yeah. And then potential differences in immune system function. There is some research suggesting that kids with autism might have differences in immune function, but it hasn't really been studied. The only thing that I can like maybe like link here is, you know, or maybe think about is just if, let's just say we do have that picky eating.
But right? there's also like some other things. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That's why I labeled it down here, because it's just one of those things. Dude, that's the problem why it took me like 2 days, because it was like, oh, this. And then I'm like, okay, but where, why? Because I got the same thing. And then I started looking and I'm like, well, shit, that's a new study I had no idea of.
Yeah.
Like, there's so much coming autism. Out. It's, like, crazy.
I know. So, some of these differences that are still being studied.
Yeah.
So,
this is very new.
Yeah, this is very new, still being studied, okay?
Yeah.
Increased inflammation. Some autistic children show higher levels of inflammatory markers, which could impact how their bodies fight infections. So, that's pretty big, right? It's basically seeing the difference on how your body reacts to a certain stress, whether that be a viral stress or something else. Autoimmune links. So some studies suggest that higher rates of autoimmune disorders like asthma, allergies, eczema can be more associated with kids with autism, which is very interesting. And then more frequent or longer lasting colds. Some parents report that their autistic children catch colds more often and seem to stay and sick for longer periods of time.
So another question that I came upon was, do autistic kids get sick more often, right? There's actually no conclusive evidence that autistic children get more colds than like neurotypical children. So that means like children that don't have autism or like other forms like ADHD, other things like that. So there isn't any conclusive evidence on that. But many autistic children have immune related conditions, like she had said, like allergies, asthma, eczema, things like that. But those things are also common in neurotypical kids too. So you can't really base it off of just that. Sensory aversions to hand washing or hygiene can increase exposure to germs.
Yeah.
So that's why there's so many freaking factors to all of this. And then anxiety and stress, as she had mentioned, can weaken the immune system as a whole, because you're adding stress to an individual that causes like inflammatory responses in your body. Your cortisol levels rise, you know, all those things, everything that's involved with stress, which potentially makes illnesses feel even worse. So now, medications commonly used in autism, right? So there's a lot of stuff here, and there's a lot of things that are new, up and coming. I'm just going to touch upon the ones that are like getting more, I guess, clicks and stuff like that. Things that are getting more word and word of mouth out there that I've been seeing more trending with autism, right? So let's dive into them, see why they're even out there. Why are they even being used or even mentioned with autism, right? So there's no cure for autism. Let's just start with that. So these medications don't fix the core traits like social challenges or repetitive behaviors. Instead, they help manage specific problems that can come with autism, just to help make life a little bit easier for both the patient and the caregivers. The first one is antipsychotics. Examples of those are risperidone and
aripiprazole.
There we go. So what are they? These are medicines originally made for serious mental health issues like schizophrenia, but these are also used in autism sometimes. So they can calm down like big emotional outbursts, like tantrums, aggression, such as like hitting, throwing things and whatnot, or even self-injury. Some folks with autism get super upset or irritable, and these drugs help turn down that intensity, in essence, if you're seeing a lot of that coming out. That's probably when the doctor would be like, maybe this is something good to try out. How do these medications work, right? So they tweak brain chemicals, especially dopamine, which can come out of balance and make people feel on edge or even act out. Think of it like adjusting a radio that's blasting static, and then you're just like lowering the volume to make things a little bit smoother.
Yeah.
And then a fun fact about these medications is that there are only two meds that are officially approved by the FDA. For autism-related irritability in kids and teens, based on studies showing that they really actually do help. Next up, you have stimulants. These are like your Ritalin, okay? What they are used typically for is for ADHD, which lots of people with autism also have. So they're prescribed to help focus and calm down that hyperactive or even impulsive behavior, like when someone just still acts out without thinking. For example, like if a kid who bounces like just off the walls does not stop like moving, it's like constant hyperactivity, it might help them settle down enough to just play and learn. But it's all dependent again. Now there's a heads up with that. They don't work well for everyone with autism as they do with just ADHD alone. And some people actually get side effects and start feeling jittery or like even lose their hunger. So that's why these things are very, very managed. Next up, you have antidepressants. So like fluoxetine, Prozac, you know, your SSRIs. So medicines mostly given for depression or anxiety, but they're also used sometimes for autism. And why is because they help with that anxiety of that feeling of being very worried or even the depression, you know, so when you see them feeling a little down, a little out, and even sometimes with those repetitive behaviors.
Yeah.
So like doing the same thing, like she had mentioned over and over again, the pacing, the walking, the touching, so many things. It could come in so many forms. How do they work? They lift the levels of that serotonin, which is a brain chemical that keeps mood steady and can stop those obsessive thoughts of taking over. But just know that these aren't FDA approved for autism specifically, but doctors use them as a like quote unquote off-label medication. So meaning that it's for a different reason than originally intended, but they're using it for it because it does actually help some patients with autism.
Yeah. And again, it's like, it's everything is not black and white.
Exactly.
If this person has autism, but they also have anxiety, then yes, an SSRI does help mm-hmm. anxiety. Yes, mm-hmm. the anxiety is probably a part of the autism, mm-hmm. but it's still treating that side of things, right?
Exactly. So it's not like the SSRI is treating autism itself.
Itself, yeah.
It's treating one of the symptoms that...
Exactly.
Yeah. Which is really important.
Yeah.
So next is sleep helpers. So like melatonin or clonidine?
Clonidine.
So close. Melatonin is, I'm sure that you've heard of it. It's a very, very common and it's a natural sleep hormone. You could just buy it over the counter. Now, clonidine is a blood pressure med that can also be used to calm people down. And why are they prescribed for this? Because many people with autism struggle to fall asleep or even just stay asleep. Up to 80% of people with autism have sleeping issues. These meds can help them just sleep better and have a better restful day the following day. And melatonin tells the brain that it's bedtime, and clonidine slows down the body. So it's making it easier for your body to relax, and then that could lead to sleep. Okay. And these sleep troubles in autism might come from just like the brain signals and that hyperactivity or sensitivity to like noise, light, and all of that. And then these medications like can help that out. Mm-hmm. Next off, you have anti-anxiety meds. So like buspirone or benzos, like lorazepam. And what they are is that they're drugs to just calm down the anxiety, right? With benzos, they're stronger, and that's why they're used less often. And they're also addictive.
Yeah, they have an addiction profile. Yeah.
Yeah. They're prescribed when some people with autism feel anxious, like, all the time about, like, loud noises, new places, social settings, that type of stuff. These meds help them, like, just calm down a bit. And then they work by calming down the brain's alarm system, which is often tied to the chemical called GABA. And it's like turning down the volume on a smoke detector that keeps beeping for no freaking reason. And I think we have all been there with a freaking smoke detector. So yeah, benzos can make you sleepy or even hooked if used for too long. That's why they're very, very they're dangerous to use for that reason, for their addictive profile. So doctors are careful with them. And lastly, you have mood stabilizers. That's like your lithium. And these meds are originally for bipolar disorder or seizures. They're prescribed when these mood swings are like really, really, really swinging. Okay. Either side of the pendulum, you know, and or it's to stop aggression. And that's just hard to control overall.
Yeah.
They are used for someone that has also may have seizures, which is 1 in 3 people with autism might deal with seizures. So they work by balancing the electrical activity in the brain, kind of like fixing a flickering light bulb so it just stays on. That's kind of how they work. And then so a little bit extra info on that is that they're less common, but can be a big help for people with extreme ups and downs. So it's kind of like exactly that, mood stabilizing. Mm-hmm. So if you have, it's normal in all intents and purposes to have swings, but when it's like very, very pronounced, very one side or the off, you know, the other, then maybe this is a good option depending on how that it works.
Yeah.
So why do meds work at all? So doctors don't have a pill to just fix autism. Like I said, there is no cure. There's no fix for autism. It just doesn't work like that because autism isn't a disease. It's how someone's brain is just wired from early on. But the symptoms like getting mad easily or feeling scared, anxiety, depression, problems with sleeping, just can take a toll. Science shows that these problems often tie to brain chemicals like dopamine, serotonin, things like that, acting up, or parts of the brain like the amygdala, which handles emotions, being extra sensitive in autism. Meds help those symptoms, those systems just like balance them out a bit if possible.
Yeah. And also, you know, I think it's actually a really, really hard decision for people and parents to decide whether or not they need to medicate their child or themselves, right? It's a big decision. I can see how that's a thing, okay? Mm-hmm. But luckily, there's other... Just because we're talking about the medications doesn't mean that this is the only option. A lot of these kids have speech therapy, occupational therapy, physical therapy, the gold standard therapy of applied behavioral analysis, which is that ABA therapy that they talk about. Those are all things that we need before we even consider
meds. Things
like medications.
Yeah.
So that's just standard, right? And with those therapies, a lot of these behaviors disappear.
Yeah.
Right? Or improve. Some of them actually do disappear.
Yeah.
Okay. However, like symptoms like aggression, violence, and all those things has to do with that anxiety. Even with some therapies, it's really hard to kind of bring that to a level that could be controllable, unfortunately.
Or it's an add. Like it's added to that.
Exactly.
To help.
So you have a conjunction of things.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right. These are kind of a little bit of the latest advances in autism research.
These are the most commonly heard of, at least of right now. There's a million of them, guys. Yeah. There's so much studying going on.
Advancements. Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot of advancements. There's a lot of studies going on. These are just the ones that are being talked about a lot these days.
Yeah. All right, so better tools to spot autism early. Scientists are finding like new ways to kind of catch autism sooner. And I think in the future, this is going to kind of lead to like genetic testing and things like that.
Yeah, possibly, but, hopefully.
Yeah, hopefully. So even babies or toddlers. So it can help start early, right? So for example, if they're using special eye tracking technology to see how kids look at faces or objects, which is super interesting.
It's so cool. And I think AI is going to take a good part of that.
Yeah, I know. So kids with autism often focus on things different than other kids, like staring at patterns instead of people's eyes. So there's also a really cool idea of by checking babies' teeth because they can show clues about metals or nutrients in the body that might be linked to autism, which is
so interesting.
Yeah.
I thought that
again, this is like latest research. Like, we are not saying that there are things that are linked 100% right now. Okay. Because I don't, you know, I know there's people out there that are going to be like, oh, no, mercury and all these things.
These are advances. These are ongoing.
Yeah. Ongoing research, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways. Other things like understanding the brain better. So using fancy brain scans, right? Like an MRI. Okay. Mm-hmm. Researchers are also peeking inside the brains of people with autism to see what's different. Like, how can we compare?
Yeah.
Okay. Both. That could be really hard, right? Because everyone is different, especially with, we've been talking about like the spectrum of it. Mm-hmm. Scientists have found that the way brain cells, okay, connect with each other, which are those synapses that we talked about before, are really different in people with autism. So for instance, some areas might be super busy while others are kind of quieter than usual. And I think that's obviously going to differ on depending on the symptoms that the person has or the signs that they're presenting with. Mm-hmm. Now, even something called diffusion MRI, it basically tracks how water moves in the brain, which is really cool. Yeah. And it shows tiny differences in brain structure. This helps explain why some people with autism might struggle with social stuff and feel overwhelmed by sounds and lights. Super cool.
Yeah. As technology increases more and more, we have the ability to like study.
Understand.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Now, genes are a really big piece to everything that we're talking about. And scientists are like really digging into DNA to figure out why autism happens. And that's a very complicated question. Yeah. However, there are 100 plus genes. So they've spotted at least 200 genes that might play a role, not just like one gene that causes it. Mm-hmm. And some of these genes might even affect how the brain cells grow or connect with each other, right? So they're kind of starting to use this info to make treatments that fit a person's unique genes and kind of like a custom-made medicine plan. This is kind of like what we were talking about, like the future of gene testing and all of that. Like, how can we personalize this to that one person? Mm-hmm. Now, for example, they're testing a drug called Suramin, originally for something else, that helped a few kids talk more than after just one dose. Though this is still being studied, it isn't really ready for everyone just yet.
Yeah.
So just things in the future that we might need to look out for. New medicines and treatments. There is new drugs to ease some of the autism challenges, like trouble with social skills and repetitive behaviors. One drug called Balovaptan works on the brain chemical called oxytocin, which is that feel-good hormone, and it has helped some people recognize emotions better. Okay, so another called CMAT uses enzymes to boost language and social skills in kids. These aren't cures, but again, things that we could potentially add to someone's treatment regimen to help them. Mm-hmm. And also just therapies like ABA therapy, which it just keeps on getting better with the technology that you're using with the ABA therapy, virtual reality, which can kind of teach kids in a more fun and interactive way.
Yeah.
Tech and AI. So artificial intelligence is stepping into the help spot to help spot autism faster. So just by like how a kid plays, like on a tablet, how they watch videos or how they move their eyes can really pick up patterns that maybe us normal people would not pick up on. It's like pretty much having a very smart person that's like very knowledgeable just look at you and say, oh, well, they're doing this. And it's kind of like making that connection.
Yeah, just focused on only that.
Yeah. Also, just like having wearable gadgets and virtual reality are kind of like helping kids like practice social stuff. So chatting with a virtual friend before actually trying it in real life, which is so cool.
It is really neat.
Yeah. Now, gut health might matter. Researchers have found that tiny bugs living in our guts called the microbiota are different in some people with autism, which just goes to like the gut microbiome. And that is like a whole entire world
on the mind gut connection.
Yes. There's so much going into that.
And there's a lot.
They're kind of testing if changing the diet or adding good bacteria could kind of help with the anxiety that can come with autism. Mm-hmm. This whole entire like angle and like viewpoint is really early in its stages. So nothing is like kind of like set in stone, but I do appreciate how we're trying to look at it from different perspectives to see if it does help. So we're going to dive into kind of more specific and newer studies.
Yeah.
And we'll have all of our sources in the show notes.
Check out the source. For every episode.
Yeah.
It's the same.
Yeah. We it's have in the show notes. All our sources in the show notes.
Yep.
So again, these are new things, not ready to kind of like be like, you, but again, new studies.
Right? Exactly. It is being used for some, but it's not like a gold standard or anything like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Okay. So folate and autism. Folate during pregnancy. Could it be potentially a protective boost? Okay. So moms who get enough folate while pregnant might lower their baby's chance of having autism. So folate helps build DNA and brain cells. So if there's not enough, then things might go off track. Some studies show a link. For example, one big study found that moms taking folic acid, the supplement version of folate, before and in early pregnancy had kids with a slightly lower risk of autism, especially if they started it before getting pregnant. Another study suggests it might protect against autism caused by stuff like pesticides and pollution. Again,
Again, look at the studies.
Real beginnings of these studies.
Okay? Exactly. But they're interesting nonetheless.
Yes, they're interesting to read about. And
exactly.
And again, like all these studies we pick off of and then like people get more specific and they test more things. Again, science is all about observation. So we need to kind of document these observations. Okay.
Exactly.
To see
and it's
if it's something that we can use to progress in the future.
Right. And it's folate. You know, it's something that is already recommended, you know, prenatally. Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting look at it.
Yeah. Like how crazy would it be like in the future, like years down the road that they start teaching like folate, like as a protection for autism, like before, you know, like, I mean,
before
right now.
You get pregnant. Yeah.
Yeah. And now like folate, really when they teach you about folate, they talk mostly about neural tube defects. So spina bifida and all those things. It's kind of like crazy to think that maybe in the future it would be for something else. But anyways, that's just my mind. Now, folate keeps the brain wiring on schedule, basically. So too little could mess up on how the brain kind of grows, maybe making autism a little bit more likely. Again, we're not sure.
This is very, very early. Yeah.
So
again, not a sure thing.
Yeah. Now, too much folate. The idea is that some researchers wonder if too much folate during pregnancy could actually raise autism risk. So there it is. So it's like now it's,
that's it.
We were just saying not enough folate and now we're saying too much folate. So it's like kind of like.
Yeah. They're just looking at folate as maybe has something to do with it. Now they're looking into like how.
Yeah, exactly.
How does it have something to do with it?
Yeah. So a small study did notice some moms with super high folate levels had slightly higher chances of having a kid with autism. Again, nothing proven. It's just an observation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to like instill fear for anyone like taking folate.
No, folate has like a lot of documented.
You should take the recommended amount of folate.
Especially if you're like planning on getting pregnant, are pregnant. You know.
And not just for autism, just like for other things.
Yeah.
Okay. Brains are also picky. So too much of a good thing can also kind of overload the system. That's kind of like what we were going off of, that maybe too much is bad. Folate problems in kids with autism. So some kids with autism might not process folate normally. That is really interesting, which could affect their symptoms. So research has found that certain kids with autism have trouble moving folate into their brains because of a glitch in something called folate receptor. And this might make their autism traits worse or tie into other issues like low energy or focus. That is super interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see how that can be linked to like different genes that some might have. Again, genes are your blueprint. So if you have one of these mutations or genes that might be linked, then that blueprint might affect the way that you process different things in your body.
Right.
Which could potentially lead to things like this is an example of that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just like one example. I'm sure that there's millions
more
that might come out in the future. Now, if folate can't get to where it needs to get to, then the brain cells might not work as well. So some doctors test for this and try special folate supplements like folinic acid to kind of bypass that glitch. But again, this is all being studied very, 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 very new. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 2024, 2025 studies
in this folate situation.
In the whole entire folate thing. Here's a kind of like a short summary of the latest response on recent folate autism studies, okay? 2024 Canadian study, moms with enough folic acid, so 0.4 daily micrograms, right? I think it's micrograms. Daily during pregnancy had kids with fewer autistic-like behaviors, even if exposed to lead, which is how, like, yeah, like those studies, it's like how yeah. they would like link also the lead in there. Does that mean, or can that mean that folate has a protective, like a protective factor from that, from like a toxin?
Right.
In a 2024 Chinese study, so taking folic acid before and during pregnancy cut an autism spectrum disease risk in kids by about half. So timing before pregnancy is key as well. And this is kind of like things that we were like kind of talking about in our first episode that we're really looking into the prenatal of things.
Yep.
And again, prenatal. That's when everything is developing, mm-hmm. right? We don't have control of certain things that may cause like gene mutations, right? However, we are looking at prenatal factors that could maybe decrease a risk.
Yeah. Okay? And that could even be genes or hereditary genes as well.
Mm-hmm. Now, a late 2024 study basically said kids with severe autism and low folate receptor levels improved in communication with leucovorin, which is a folate, like kind of a form of folate that you can ingest, and then hinting at personalized treatments for some. Super, super interesting. Mm-hmm. And then what's the big picture? Recent research shows that folate can lower autism risk for birth and might help certain kids after, especially if their brains can't use it up normally. So if they have that receptor problem.
Yeah, the studies are small, but they're promising and they're still being developed. So none of this is the gold standard. None of this is like the definite situation, I guess.
But this is like where the science world is, the status of the science world is with the newer studies.
And it's folate.
Folate, yeah.
That's pretty interesting on its own.
Yeah.
All right, so the future of autism research. Science is making big strides in autism research, as we were mentioning right now. Like, for instance, AI and early diagnosis. Using machine learning to detect autism even before the age of 2. Brain imaging, like she had briefly mentioned before. Studies that are identifying unique neural patterns in autism. Then there's also that gut-brain research. Scientists are exploring how the gut microbiome affects autism symptoms. And then autism in the workplace. So like more companies like Microsoft and Google are hiring neurodivergent individuals for their unique problem solving skills, which is undeniable. Yeah. Many, many of them like do show some skills that are like just incredible.
Yeah.
Now, myths about autism that they just need to go away. All right.
Yeah.
So first one, all autistic people are geniuses. Not true. That's like overgeneralizing everybody. Some are, definitely. But then again, some aren't.
It's like a weird thing to say.
But like people do say that. And I feel like
not in a negative way.
Yeah.
You know?
But like, I think it's perpetuated by like movies and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
You know? Like, for instance, like A Beautiful Mind.
Beautiful Mind, yeah.
You know, things like that is like perpetuating that into almost like a stereotype.
Yeah.
Next one is...
Yeah, I don't think that if like someone says, oh, they have autism, like that you should follow up with a question like, well, what's their like special, you know?
Yeah, what's their IQ or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Anyway. It could be a little bit ignorant. It could look a little bit ignorant.
100%. Yeah. And next one is autistic people don't have emotions. It's fucking bullshit. Wrong. Many experience emotions deeply. They just show it or even don't in different ways.
Yeah.
Again, that's why it's not neurotypical. So the last one is you don't look autistic. The way that this is so prevalent, especially in social media.
Yeah.
And mostly people, and I'm glad that people are coming out that have autism or, you know, they fall somewhere in the spectrum and they come out and they're like, I have autism or I fall in the spectrum. Yeah. I don't have to look a certain way for it. That's great because it's true. Autism just, it doesn't have a look. It's a neurological condition. I understand how some people that are not very well versed in like autism or anything like that, they could be like, well, Down syndrome is. I'm like, that's a completely different thing.
Yeah.
Completely different.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, people make, as we saw in the last episode, people make like very crazy like leaps.
Leaps, exactly. They pull a lot of information and then they take it somewhere that you're like, wait, how did you get there?
Exactly. Like, how does that even correlate? But sure.
All right. So historical figures like Albert Einstein or Isaac Newton, they were kind of speculated to have some form of autism spectrum. Mm-hmm. However, this is unconfirmed. Remember, if you tune into our first episode, we kind of talk about like when autism kind of became a thing. Okay.
In the 80s, it was officially diagnosed.
It was officially diagnosed in the 80s. Some autistic individuals have savant skills. So excelling in music, art, mathematics, like Stephen Wilshire.
Wiltshire is how I would say. Yeah.
So like Stephen, I don't know who that is. Who is that?
He's an artist and he does like these incredible cityscapes. Like it's these drawings and paintings that's like perfectly detailed. It's like the most like detailed. It's beautiful.
I need to look at this.
Yeah, he's a wonderful artist.
So it's kind of excelling in music, in art, in mathematics.
And you can kind of see that with like how we had mentioned before, how they could sometimes like really gravitate towards like a hobby or an interest or something. Yeah. And then just invest all of their energy into it. Mm-hmm. So you could kind of see how that could propel something. You know, like a instrument or drawing or art, some form of art. That makes sense.
Yeah. Autism being more diagnosed in males but underdiagnosed in females is also a growing concern, with recent studies showing kind of like that the gender gaps is closing.
Yeah, so it's probably misdiagnosed. Exactly. Underdiagnosed.
Yeah. And then notable autistic individuals, including Temple Grandin, an animal behaviorist, and Greta Thunberg, an environmental activist, highlighting the diverse achievements. So again, like just because you have autism doesn't mean that you are all of a sudden like going to be completely limited in everything. Mm-hmm. Yes, you might need therapies. You might need certain different methods of kind of treating your symptoms. But that doesn't mean that you won't be able to succeed in other areas.
Also, it depends on your grade. What was it? Was it a grade?
Oh, yeah. Your grading. Like how severe?
The severity of your autism. Where do you fall on the spectrum
as well?
Yeah,
like how much help you need.
Exactly. Where do you fall on the spectrum as well? Because like there's, as we had gone in the first episode, there's several that fall under the spectrum too that are different from each other.
Yeah.
So it's so it's different.
And then kind of like how we had debunked in our previous episode, autism isn't caused by vaccines. And it's a part of the neurodiversity movement, celebrating brain differences as something valuable. And the spectrum means no two autistic people are alike, basically some needing minimal support and some needing way more support. Again, it is a spectrum and it's multifactorial. And it's huge.
It's a lot. Hence why we have a two-parter that both parts were pretty lengthy in comparison to most of our episodes. But we thought it was fitting and it was needed to be done because there's just so much talk these days. Again, we're not a political podcast and I think this also serves
for people that maybe our goal is to help people and increase understanding and see where the research is, where the science is, like where are we with autism as of 2025, like what's out there so far. And honestly, my hope is that this reaches someone that, I don't know, maybe got the diagnosis. One of their loved ones got diagnosed, or maybe they got diagnosed and they don't really understand. And my hope is that they look at this and they see everything we kind of talk about and that may answer some of their questions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because our main thing is trying to make these big things,
complicated things
more digestible and easier to just understand. We're talking about like genes and stuff like that, which we briefly touched upon in the first part. And it's just, there's a lot of complexity to this. So it totally makes sense for you to get, if you yourself get the diagnosis or somebody in your family or loved one, however, gets a diagnosis, then you start reading, then you start looking, then you start listening. And there's so many things behind it. So we just wanted to break it down in a more easier to understand, more easily to digest way as well.
Yeah. So did a great job.
Thanks. But it's just because it's such a large thing and it's so talked about these days. Yeah. It's very, very, very like talked about these days. And for some reason, politics wants to grab a hold of it. And I hope they don't, because it's very frightening to see how the vaccine talk is being brought up again these days. And then this topic is being brought up these days along with it as well. Yeah. It's become an unfortunate trending topic that doesn't need to be in the way that it is. Because of that, we decided to let's shed some actual information out here. Yeah. Again, all the sources are listed in all the show notes, whether you listen or you watch this, however it is. Just don't let politics take a hold of your medical life.
Yeah.
I really think that that's something that we are unfortunately making a mistake in these days.
Yeah. I mean,
you know, the science is there.
Yeah.
The proof is there. And vaccines should be separated from autism. Autism is something serious, and it's something that is still being studied, and it's something important. You know, yeah. It's very important. It's very prevalent, and it's becoming more and more things are coming out of autism every day, as it should be, you know? And because of that, the more and more that we invest towards autism, the more and more I think we will see that vaccines don't correlate with it. And hopefully one day we get to a point that we finally get that why. So we could finally, because I really think that the only way that we will be able to dismantle this whole vaccine bullshit with autism is when we finally give it an actual why.
Yeah.
As to why it's happening. And with all
this, that might be a complicated answer.
It might be a complicated answer, because if we're talking about genes, genetics, and all
genes,
that.
Genes, environmental factors.
Genetics is a hell of a complicated topic. Yeah. It's really, really complicated. The biomechanisms just everything of genetics is really, really complicated to understand if you're not in that field. But hopefully we do find a why. And then once we find that why, everybody will be able to figure out how to explain it. But that's the whole reason why research and studies like this are being conducted.
Yeah.
To try to dismantle that thing that quacked it. So yeah, hope you guys liked this two-parter. We thought it was important and relevant in today's environment here in the US, at least. I know a lots of you are listening from outside of the US, from Australia. We got the UK. We got all over Europe as well. So that's really fun. But yeah, in the US, it's a little bit of a mess with vaccines right now. But yeah, if you are listening to this, please get vaccinated. Have your kids vaccinated. Our kids are vaccinated. We are vaccinated. Especially with the typical, the MMRs, the polio, those type of proven for generations vaccines at this point. Oh, and check out our merch. Mm-hmm. What's up? What's up?
It's really cute.
What's up? Anyway, check out our merch. And again, it's going to be also listed in the show notes below anywhere you listen or watch this, along with the show notes and all that stuff. Thanks for all the support. Thank you for everything through all our social media accounts and all that stuff, as well as here in YouTube. And if you have any suggestions for anything else that you want us to cover, let us know. We're always open to those. Actually, we just shifted the schedule for all of these.
For the things that are kind of trending and requests.
Exactly. So yeah, we thank you for tuning in on this one, and we hope to see you in the next one.
Bye.
Bye. Comment, review us on all streaming platforms, Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, etc.
Check us out on Instagram and TikTok at Funny Medicine Podcast. Our Gmail is funnymedicine305@gmail.com. And remember, we are not diagnosing you.
Definitely not. Just funny stuff.
See you later, guys.